Hi, I'm Riley Moines, author of The Four Phases of Retirement and its sequel, The 10 Lessons. We're speaking with people who are squeezing all the juice out of their retirement, people with widely divergent backgrounds, experience, and expertise, people with stories that can inspire and encourage you, too, to squeeze all the juice out of your retirement. Thanks for joining us for today's conversation. Here we go. My guest today is Jan Rose. Her working career was concentrated in education. She taught briefly at the elementary level and then spent nearly three decades teaching at the secondary level, mostly as a music teacher and department head. Throw in some English as a second language experience and 5 years as the dean of students at a private school, and you have a full career. Now retired from her teaching, she certainly has not slowed down one single bit. She currently serves on the executive of not one, but two community organizations. She plays in not one, but two community concert bands. She works part-time, and she squeezes in some travel with family and friends. Wow. Welcome, Jan. I'm pleased you could find time to join me today.
Thank you. Thank you, Riley. I'm delighted to be here, and I'm really looking forward to participating.
Well, let's get going then. I appreciate that. Thank you. So let's first talk about those community organizations. I know that you're a secretary of the Canning Lake Cottagers Association, and I know that you have a lifelong connection with the area. So what's so important about that area and that association for you, and how do you contribute?
Well, if you asked any of my friends or family where my happy place is, they would say on Canning Lake, on the dock. I think it is important to me because when I was 10, my dad and mom purchased the lot, and then my dad actually built the cottage.
Right.
They actually had a cottage before that. So I was born into summer cottages the year before I was born.
Okay.
So we spent a lot of time up there, happy memories,
yeah.
Pretty much over 50 years at the cottage. Mm-hmm. And just the family traditions and the fun and the neighbors and the sense of community and nature are all important to me.
So what's the main goal of that association?
Well, the Canning Lake Property Owners Association is committed to preserving the environment of Canning Lake itself and the area around. So right. Our actual mandate says to take appropriate action for the protection and improvement of the natural environment. And my mom and dad were involved in the Canning Lake Properties Owners Association right almost from the beginning. Right. We participated in the annual general meeting and then lots of the other activities that go on through the summer. And I really enjoyed that as a kid. And then about 6 or 7 years ago, a very good friend of mine was the president of the association, and she passed away very suddenly, terrible cancer. And the organization, the executive, was really at a loss.
Right.
So I have time now. It's time for me to step up and step up in Janice's name because I believe in what they do.
Yeah, good for you. Good for you. Now, I know that you're also membership chair of the new Probus Club in Richmond Hill. So tell me, how did you get involved there?
Well, our sister-in-law, Paul's sister Ruth, belongs to two Probus Clubs in Collingwood. And so for the last 10 years or so, we've heard Probus this, my Probus Club that. And we thought, what a funny name. And what is that? So anyway, we got to know a little bit about what it was about. And then I just sort of saw on Marge Andre's What's On Richmond Hill that she publishes that there was going to be a first organizational meeting.
Right.
And I texted Paul. He was still working in his last year of teaching. And I said, do you think I should go to the meeting and we could see what this is all about and we can maybe join? Because the groups that Ruth belongs to in Collingwood are very active. And it just sounded like something that will be perfect for both Paul and I in our retirement.
Right. So it was that activity that attracted you to Probus in the first case.
Yes. The activity and the intellectual stimulation with the guest speakers, which is a big part of Richmond Hill Phobos group, and just a chance to meet other friends outside of school. With both Paul and I being high school teachers, you end up spending a lot of time with your work colleagues as a teacher, and there really often isn't a life outside until the end of June.
Right. Now, I know that Paul's involved too. I know you volunteered him on several occasions when he wasn't around to say no. So what's his involvement with the Provost Club at this time?
So before that meeting, I had said to him, you know, they'll have a list that you guys published a list of the offices that would be up for, you know, taking to get rolling. And I know both you and Brenda and Ruth said, we need people to start this or we're not going to have a group. So I said to him at the time, I said, I might see what's involved with the membership. And, but there's a newsletter. There might be a newsletter. Would you be interested? And Paul said, well, I'd be interested in helping with it. Right. But if some, you know, if anybody wants, but I knew that that's his real love of writing.
Okay. So he's the newsletter guy now, doing a great job. Now, I know, Jan, that you're also the performing member of not one, but two community bands, one in Aurora and one in Richmond Hill, Ontario. I know music is in your genes and that you taught it for years, but what's the appeal of playing in two different community bands? How did that happen?
Well, I think what I realized as a music director, I was always doing the conducting and choosing the repertoire and standing at the front of the performing groups for years. But I love playing, and my major instrument is trombone. But I thought, oh, you know what? Maybe I could just, most good concert bands are always looking for a bass, some kind of a bass line.
Right.
And so I thought, you know what? My youngest son plays tuba. We have a couple of tubas in our home.
Right.
So I picked it up and worked on it for a bit. And then I got in touch with a very good friend of mine who we started teaching at the same time in 1980. And would just see each other maybe once a year, not even sometimes. And she was retiring. And I said, okay, Sandra, she's also a tuba player.
Right.
let's look into Gord's band in Aurora. And she had played with his band for a little bit. And I said, let's see if he would like a couple of tubas and we could perhaps join that group. So, of course, Gord said, Jan, you can never have too many tubas at all. So, of course, please come. So it gives Sandra and I a really good chance to stay connected, and I pick her up on rehearsal night and we drive together. And to play in the Aurora band, which is the one I joined first, the bands are very different. The Aurora band plays two very serious, we call them legitimate concerts a year for an audience in one of the churches in Aurora. And we work on difficult music that we always have a theme. But it's really good for my brain. It puts me back in the seat of a player, which I kind of wish I had done as a teacher, because sometimes you forget what it's like to sit there as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have to practice. The music is tough. The people in the group are superb musicians. And it's just lovely being a part of such an accomplished musical group. But in the meantime, I knew that there was the Richmond Hill Concert Band. And I have a couple friends who play in that band who are in the Provost group. And there, it's a very different band. Again, they were ecstatic to have me. Nobody really heard me play first, but
your reputation went ahead of you.
I think so. And so I went to the first rehearsal, and it's just not that it's a different. It's the music is still challenging. But their mandate is to give back to the community. And I live in Richmond Hill, so they don't do the serious concerts. They do Canada Day performances in town. We played before the Christmas holidays that just passed. We played in, I think, 6 or 7 seniors' homes.
Uh-huh.
So for me, that is just such a joy to go and be able to give back and to provide music for people who are so, so appreciative.
Yeah, that's
having
nice.
For them. So I like that they're, and the music, then of course the concert programs are different. One is a little more serious music, and then the Richmond Hill band plays fun audience appeal music that people like to hear, and they clap along, and it's really great.
And you're a tuba player in both of those, are you?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Now, I know that, just so you don't get bored, you work part-time at Weight Watchers as a coach and as a guide. So tell us a little bit about your background there. I understand that you've been a longtime member and that health is important to you. And what else was the attraction at Weight Watchers on a part-time basis for you?
Well, the attraction, sort of like all of my other interests, they do have a little bit of looking after self, looking after Jan. Mm-hmm. What's good for me,
good,
that I can get out of it. And being a longtime, lifetime member of WW, I was getting ready to retire from teaching. And I sort of came to the conclusion myself that when retirement was going to come, it was going to be like the summer holidays, but all the time. And in, I would be on the dock, you know, with a beer or two in my hand and not really paying attention. And then I think, ooh, it's September. I better get serious about watching what's happening on the scale or where how my clothes are fitting. So I was at a meeting participating because I attend the meetings once a week. I did for my whole life for 32 years. And one of the leader, the coach who was coaching that day, said to me at the end of the meeting, she said, "Jan, have you ever thought of coming to work for WW?" And I said, "Oh, well, you know, I'm working full time now, but I might consider it because, boy, it would keep me accountable."
Sure.
So she put my name forward to be a coach. And I said at the time, I would rather be a guide. And the difference is the coach runs the meeting and does a half hour workshop with our members and motivates and talks about the topic of the day and the health information. The guide is the person who meets the members at the door and weighs them in, talks to them about their journey and gives them tips, one-on-one, more one-on-one. And the guide job at the time was using an iPad, which I was not technologically savvy at all. So I said, I would like to try to be a guide first, just to have a change from being teaching, just to have for myself a break from, you know, standing at the front and leading the workshop. So I trained to be a guide, and I didn't get my own workshop really for about 2 years. Mm-hmm. I was just filling in, which was a good thing because I would fill in Newmarket and Markham and all kinds of different centers. So I got to know a lot of people and I know people and places that I would like to work if I was ever offered a workshop. And then I was offered a workshop.
Right. Now, the technology aspect, you said that you were not tech savvy, but the fact that it was required was something that was of appeal to you.
Yes. Sometimes I have to force myself to try to learn something new. Right. And it had a great goal at the end of it. And I truly, I'm the kind of person that if I don't do something, if I'm not actually touching the machine and learning how to work it, you can tell me a million times how to scan something on the printer, but if I don't do it every day, remember it.
So hands-on is better for you.
Yes, exactly. So I learned that, and it was so rewarding, just the one-on-one piece. And then another workshop was losing their coach, so they asked me if I would do a short training for coaching. So it's very similar to teaching. I still prepare a lesson plan.
Yeah.
I prepare what I'm going to talk about to try to engage people in the workshops. So that part I have also liked too.
Great. Now, speaking of new technology, I know that you and Paul are part of a small but growing number of people who drive a fully electric vehicle. Tell me the background to that one.
We do. Well, it had been coming for a long time. It had been coming for a long time, our interest in the electric car, mostly from Paul and mostly then again from his brother, Henry. Mm-hmm. And Henry had a Chevy Bolt for maybe 4 or 5 years, and we had ridden in it and learned about it, and it was time for us. Our cars were dwindling. We were running two, but we didn't need the big van anymore.
Right.
So Paul said, "Let's go to the place on Steeles where you can test drive the electric cars." And we drove a few other cars, but we did like the Bolt. And again, it was the environment. And honestly, when Paul and I used to teach together at Bayview Secondary School, that's where we met. And we were there for a long time together, 20 years maybe. And when Paul was at Bayview, he was the head and started the green team a long, long, long time ago to do recycling from the classrooms. Mm. So the importance of the environment has been in our family since the very beginning, even before we were a couple.
Yeah.
And see him with his team dragging the blue boxes down the hall at school. And I think, man, that's really a good thing to be doing, you know, for kids to learn.
Sure.
So we looked into the electric car. We decided to just lease it, though, and we've never leased a car before either. That was a new thing.
Yeah.
Just because the Bolt does have a good range of about 400 kilometers on a charge. But maybe in 3 or 4 years, technology will change and we might not have been able to sell if we had bought the car.
Sure.
So now I truly believe we will continue to own a fully electric car.
Right.
Which one it's going to be, I'm not sure.
Sure. But it does look like the future, doesn't it?
It sure does. And both of our sons really like the car. It's got a lot of pep.
Yes.
And you're plugging it in. It really makes you feel good. Even though gas is not a bad price sometimes,
yeah.
It's nice to be able to know that we're helping.
Right, right. Now, Jen, you're doing a lot of volunteer stuff, and so I need to ask you what's in all of this stuff for you? What do you get out of it?
Boy, I think it keeps me intellectually stimulated. Everything that I do, I have to think and I have to plan. And it also is a great, all of them are great social networks for mm-hmm. me by mm-hmm. choice.
Mm-hmm.
I really have a great deal of satisfaction when I help people. And sometimes I don't even know that I'm helping them in some way, but just sharing what I know.
Sure.
And hear back from folks later that, boy, you really, you know, got me through
mm-hmm.
a time that was tough, or you really helped me move ahead and know what I was going to move forward to nice. Focus on. And the days are always filled. Even when I taught, my days were pretty full. But this is nice that I get to choose
mm-hmm.
what I'm going to fill my day with. But right. the satisfaction of hearing somebody say, wow, you know, I remember when you taught me how to knit when I broke my leg or I had my Achilles surgery mm. and I was laid up and I made all kinds of clothes for my granddaughter.
Nice.
So just on little skills that I have. And I learned that from my mom and dad, really.
Yeah.
My parents, my dad always said, you get out of life what you put into it
mm-hmm.
and try to be always as involved as you possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
So I get a great deal of enjoyment out of being active and involved.
You've learned those lessons well. Jen, when you hear the phrase squeezing all the juice out of retirement, which is kind of the theme of our podcast series here, what does that mean to you?
It means, I think, making the absolute most of every minute mm-hmm. of every day and every opportunity that comes your way.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you think it might be a positive opportunity or maybe not a positive opportunity, there's always something to learn from life as it comes at you. And as we get older, I remember the day I turned 60 and I thought, oh man, now I'm kind of seem to be on the downhill part of, and it really hit me. And I thought, oh, I'm not going to be sad about this, but you know, it's time to continue doing what
sure.
I'm doing,
right.
but in different ways. And I love your expression of rewiring
mm-hmm.
or repurposing
yep.
yourself. I think you always, my dad always said also he had to have something to look forward to, and
right.
A person always needs to have a purpose.
Yeah.
And I've met some people who have been retired for maybe 3 or 4 years, and I say to them, actually one of the fellows who sits beside me in band, and I said, isn't that great? Isn't retirement awesome? And he said, I don't really know. So later on he shared that, you know, he kind of needed some more things to do, even though he plays in 3 bands.
Wow.
But
so if someone were to ask you your advice as to what they should do to squeeze all the juice out of retirement, I have a sense that I know what you're going to say, but what advice would you give those folks?
Well, I think I was always lucky that I knew what I was interested in, and I knew that if I had some spare time, what I would do for fun, like I just couldn't wait to read, or I couldn't wait to knit when the Academy Awards were on, or things like that. But I think some people don't maybe know what their interests are, what they're good at.
Mm-hmm.
And my advice would be to ask people, ask your loved ones, ask your kids, grandkids, your family, if they could describe you, what do you do well, or what is your passion, and what do you, what are your interests? What do you seem to like to do? Or you could even word it to them. You could say, if I was to start another career, what do you think I would be good at?
Right.
Even though it's not a paying career, but it's still a purposeful, responsible career.
Yep.
Because I really think sometimes people don't really know what they would be good at because they're tied to their career or their responsibilities, whatever those were when they were working full time. But also, I think you have to get ready to try a few things. And some things will fail. Some things you will say, wow, what was I thinking? That's not really, I'm watching the clock. I don't want to really, I'd like to be somewhere else.
Yeah.
And to try other things, but to not be afraid to try.
That was certainly one of the things that came clear to me in my interviews with people, and I came to describe it as phase three, where we conduct some trial and error. And if you don't know what it is that is really going to be of interest to you, you really just have to try, and you have to keep trying, and you have to recognize that some things will end up just flat on the floor and they were a bad idea, but you've got to move on. And that's the advice that you've been giving to people as well.
Exactly.
What aspects, Jen, of this phase of your life are you finding most gratifying?
Oh, wow. Gratifying, I would say, is to, when I lay down to go to sleep at night, I think, did I fill that day as full as I could possibly fill it and make sure that it was purposeful? And almost always the answer is yes. Sometimes too full, sometimes too much.
Wow.
But yes, yeah, like very, very, very satisfying.
That's great to be able to do that each day and feel that you've squeezed all the juice. Now, on the other side, though, what if any aspects of this phase of your life are you finding most challenging?
Two things. There isn't enough time in the day, which nope can change. I would like to have more time. When people say, "Oh, what would you like for your birthday?" or "What do you want to do for your birthday?" and my answer is always just, "Let's spend time together. Like, give me some time with you, so that we can share and have some fun." But I am realizing now that I have to be careful that I don't plan myself. I don't take on too much.
Right.
So, and I gradually sort of learned that. And it's funny because I keep all of my things that I'm involved with have like tote bags of my files. And at one point there were five bags lined up here. And the last bag was unfortunately for my dad's estate. And my dad passed away at the end of October.
Right.
And that was something that came onto my plate that of course I wasn't expecting, or did I even want to have to think about. And when that happened, I thought, okay, there's some things there that I'm not going to be able to do my best at or to fulfill.
Right.
And I had to just sort of resort out my time to make sure that I was looking after my health.
Right.
Because my hour of walking outside every day wasn't happening because I didn't have time.
Yeah. Jen, what kind of new initiatives do you have planned for the future?
Well,
what's up your sleeve?
Yeah, up my sleeve. Well, a really neat new thing is that in the settlement of my dad's estate, I have two younger brothers, and we've agreed that my husband and I and my sons will take over the family cottage.
Oh, nice.
So that's, I was a little afraid what was going to happen with it, but it's going to work out beautifully.
Nice.
And so that's a different lens to look through now as a cottage owner. So I'm learning a lot about that kind of stuff. But absolutely, Paul and I want to travel. I'd like to spend as much time as possible with him and with my sons. And I'm grateful that they're both at home with us now. My youngest just finished his first year of university. And so they're both still at home in their very early 20s.
Yeah.
And it's nice to just have dinner together every night and to plan things. I don't know if we'll travel too much as a family because the boys have got a lot on their plates.
Right.
But I'd like to help them, you know, happily launch out of our home into their own homes.
Sure.
In the near future. But Paul and I would love to travel. We've been out on our bikes already twice.
One day
was, I think it was snowing, but there we were. Well, the snow happened after we left, but We love to ride bikes. I love to do things outside. I have golfed in the past. I would consider taking that up again, but my funnest time on the golf course is looking at the alligators in Florida or, right. or the scenery when I played at Lake Placid. I couldn't concentrate on the game. It was just so beautiful. Nine holes is my limit, you know, but also to be in touch with friends. And I've really tried in the last 3 or 4 weeks that have been a little trying to contact at least two people a day by phone. I speak to them who I haven't talked to in a while.
No, good for you.
I have I'm recording so that I make sure I'm touching base with folks at least once a month because it's a little bit of a hard time.
For sure. For sure. Jen, let me ask you this one. If you didn't know your date of birth, how old would you be?
That's a very difficult question. Mentally, I would be 30 or younger, but I've got the wisdom of those other years.
What a great combination.
Yeah. Physically, I wish I could have the energy that I used to have. I do have still a lot of energy, but I have to go to bed early at tennis. Yeah, and I'd like to ride my bike out on the trails. Goes miles on the roads. I can't do that. I poop out. So.
Right. But you're young at heart. You're young at heart, that's for sure.
Exactly.
That's for sure. Jen, listen, I want to thank you very much. We've had some challenges in even getting together for this conversation, but I appreciate your sticking to it, and I appreciate your spending time with me here today.
My pleasure.
We're always interested in hearing from people who are squeezing all the juice out of retirement. And if that sounds like you, I'd love to hear from you and perhaps we can share your story with our listeners. You can contact me by email, riley@squeezingthejuice.ca. Thanks again, Jan. Bye.
Thank you,
Ryan.
My pleasure. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. I hope you've enjoyed today's conversation and that you'll join us again next time as we help you squeeze all the juice out of retirement. I'm Riley Moines. Bye for now.